projects that were listed under presentation, and I'm going to get into that. One of the reasons we left it that way is I wanted to kind of use it as an example. So, can I just hit it, or do I have to? No. Basic municipal law. Town of Oro Valley is a municipality. Municipality is a subdivision of the state of Arizona. The town can only exercise authority granted to it by the state of Arizona. What does that mean? Well, it means the state of Arizona has adopted, has adopted a bunch of laws that you have to follow. Okay? I'm going to go over what those laws are. You've probably already heard this. If you got on this commission the first time, you probably already went through some training on this. We have to go through it again. Your new members, we're going to grab all of them and all the committees and everything and go over it with them, but we have to go and refresh everybody. All right? So that's why we're here today. So the overall purpose of the open meeting law is to protect the public. It avoids any decisions made in secret. You can't have any backroom deals. It promotes accountability by encouraging officials to act responsibly. But most of all, what people fail to realize is it protects you as public officials. And I'll get into that later. Because if you do something wrong, it's your own personal responsibility, unfortunately, under the law. And you may be fined. You have to pay that fine yourself. The town can't pay it. So we want to make sure we follow all of these laws. So it also avoids exclusion. You're providing notice to everybody about what you're going to do. You're going to adequately prepare everyone about what's going to be talked about. You're going to memorialize what happened in your minutes so all of the public can see. And then, most of all, you maintain integrity and you build trust between the government and its citizens, correct? So, one thing about Arizona. All 50 states have open meeting laws. Arizona is very, very tough on theirs, much more so than most of the other states. We've run into problems before where people have come from other states and think it's always the same. It's not. So if you think you came from another state and you think you can do something, you better check first because you can get yourself in a lot of trouble. So check with the staff, check with the legal department, check with the town clerk. Okay? So here's the bit statutory basics of what we've got to do for the open meeting law. An agenda. All meetings of the public body must be publicly and conspicuously noticed at least 24 hours in advance. So when she said presentations wasn't on it, did presentations appear 24 hours in advance? Yes, it did. So that complies with the law. Now, when you have an agenda, you shouldn't talk about things that are not on it. And I'll get into some of that a little bit later here. It has to be properly posted. There are certain designated locations where you put this, and we also have a website for the town where it's put on. And it has to be specific. It has to have sufficient specificity to enable members of the public to understand what's being discussed. So, I'm telling you, this is the open meeting law. I am going to talk about your duties under the open meeting law. I am going to talk about your responsibilities, how they may relate to the Oro Valley Historical Society when they get to conflicts of interest. However, is this the best way to phrase it, what we have on our agenda? No. Did I know people are going to be mad when I saw that come out?
Yes, I did.
And I was absolutely correct. I knew that they would be upset when that came out. However, because it's not the best description. So when you're putting together an agenda, we've got to make sure that we're specific enough that the public can understand what we're talking about. This is close enough. I'm covering everything that was on there. But nevertheless, words matter. So when you're going and placing items on the agenda in the future, think about how you want them phrased for us, okay? Because if you put it down wrong and then wander off into some other subject, we can all get in trouble. All right. It has to be done in public. All actions of the public body have to be done in public, and there have to be minutes. Those are the statutory basic requirements. So, call to the audience. As you just heard, we have a call to the audience. What does the state law say about having calls to the audience? Well, there is no requirement for a call to the audience. Why is that? And it's very strange. But basically, a call to the audience is a problem because it isn't agendized, whatever they're going to talk about. So actually, the Attorney General's office about 10 years ago told us we should eliminate calls to the audience from all agendas. And we got, as you can imagine, all the lawyers said, what? And all the people said, what? Because they wanted to have the chance to address their representatives. So they let us leave it on, but they left it on with all that stuff you just read about before. We're not allowed to discuss anything with them ahead of time. Okay? You can't do it. You just, all you can do is say, oh, well, we'll refer that to another meeting, or no, we don't agree. That's about it. That's about all you can do on call to the audience, because it hasn't been agendized, and other people won't know what anybody's going to bring up. So, that's the problem with presentations. The presentations, when you go into a presentation, has to be specifically noticed enough that people know what you're going to talk about. So when you have a report from somebody like the Historical Preservation Society, who we love, by the way, I just want everybody to know, we love the Historical Preservation Society, we have to do things together. Yes?
Historical Society, Historic Preservation Commission.
Commission, okay, Historical Society. It could be a problem because it hasn't been agendized. We don't know what they're going to talk about. So that's why we have some problems with it. We can say there's a presentation, and they can give a presentation, but we can't discuss what they give during their presentations because it hasn't been agendized. Okay? By the way, I left that language because now they're here and they can listen to what I'm talking about. So you know. So the public only has a right to attend, a right to listen to the proceedings, and they can audio record or videotape or electronically record. Well, the town already audio records it. The town already videotapes everything. So, but they can do it themselves if they want to. But really, the public's right, which most people don't understand, and if you don't believe me, ask the Arizona Ombudsman, is they can attend meetings and listen. Okay? So they don't have a right to speak, interrupt, or give opinions. Now, I'm not saying they won't, because there are some things that are designated, okay, public hearings. And when it says public hearing on an agenda, the public has a right to speak to you. That's what happens at council meetings. And there are certain things set out in statutes where you can have them. The other thing is the chair can allow people outside to speak if they want to. I'm not saying you're cut off completely. I'm just saying that they don't have the right to do that.
Yes. To clarify, though, it would be in response to what the current topic is.
Yes.
Okay.
So, meetings. This is where things get real funky. You have to listen to an attorney lecture, yeah? As if I wasn't already. Okay, what constitutes a meeting? This is where Arizona goes off the rails with just about everybody else. Meeting means any gathering in person or through technology of a quorum of members, where they may discuss, propose, or take legal action. Propose is where almost everything goes sideways on you, because proposals are, just about everything's a proposal when you're talking about business, okay? So the term meeting has to be construed very broadly under the Attorney General, and public bodies include you, and they include your subcommittees, and they include everything else. So, let's just say four of you went to an HPS meeting, okay? They brought something up, you guys are sitting there discussing it. Guess what? Is that a problem? Oh, yeah. Yes, it's a problem, because that is considered a meeting by the Arizona Attorney General. So, okay, so we have some problems here, discussions going back and forth with the Historical Society, and I'll get into some of the other parts of it. But I'm just here to tell you what to do and what not to do, okay? For example, did you hear Councilmember Smith was admitted to the hospital? That's not a proposal. But if you're saying, hey, you know, we could use some more shade in the park, maybe we should get a shade structure there, that's a proposal. All right? So very innocuous things all of a sudden become proposals if there's four of you. And it's even if there's only one-way communication under the Attorney General. So if somebody sent out an email, just was talking to you guys about how's the weather, and by the way, the Wildcats are doing so well in basketball, and oh, by the way, maybe we need a shade structure down there. One-way communication. You don't respond, you don't do anything to it. It's still a meeting. So, footnote 5. It can be argued the definition meaning refers to a gathering of the quorum. Well, the AG said no. No, you don't have to be in this formal meeting setting. So, which organizations below are subject to the Arizona open meeting laws? Arizona legislature, golf course operators that the town has hired, the local homeowners associations, and this HBC. Which one of those?
All of them.
No! Only this board and commission. Why? Because the state legislature, when they adopted the rules, exempted themselves. So they don't have to follow it. They just made us have to follow it, cities and towns and all these others. That homeowners association isn't a state agency, so they don't fall under it. Same with the business. This is a businessman running a golf course. They're not subject to it. So it only applies to specified state government agencies, counties, municipalities, school boards, and fire districts. It's also very hard to operate under, so you can understand why they've limited it to just us. Sorry, we're the lucky ones. Sorry. So meetings can be in person or through technological devices, and council board members cannot gather and decide illegally through polling, consensus, or any other device. Staff and friends can't be used to circumvent the law. This is where we get into problems with HPS, and I'll go over it a little bit more. HPS are our friends, okay? You guys talk all the time, and you should. I mean, let's be honest. But we've got to be very careful about how we talk, okay? Because if you talk to Mr. Lee here, and he gives you kind of his opinion on what you're talking about, what you'd like to see, and then he goes and talks to Commissioner Bozeman, and Bozeman goes and talks to Commissioner Beadle about that. Well, that's only three, so you'd think you wouldn't have a meeting because you haven't reached the quorum before, right? No, you'd be wrong again. Why would you be wrong? Well, mostly because how many of you are here now? There's only four of you, although this is a seven-member board. So what constitutes a quorum at this meeting in order to pass anything? Three people. So a lot of people try and count to four and say, well, I haven't talked to four people, and they do it wrong, because if they talk to three people, there's also a chance you've reached the quorum level. So if HBS wants to talk to you guys, they shouldn't be talking to more than two. Okay? So here's a training question, council commission member texts another member a question about money being allocated to an organization that's being spent and it doesn't seem to fit what they remember the requirements to be. So maybe we should do something. Okay, the second member texts back, hey, I don't even remember what the requirements are. Okay, so then they contact a third member who also doesn't know, but they call their friend who loves this kind of detail work and gives them an answer. So fine, they contact back with the first person. Now, friend, this wise friend that knows everything, goes to the gym that very next day and talks to council member four about what happened. Have you had a meeting?
Yes.
Yeah, you've had a meeting. So you've got to be really careful about the number of people you talk to about things. Yep. Did I go too far? Yeah, probably yes. Yeah, I said that. It was probably illegal. You don't have to participate simultaneously. I think I made that pretty clear. Electronic communications are part of it. So four activities constitute a meeting if a quorum is involved: discussing, proposing, taking, or deliberating. And proposing is almost always where we end up with trouble. That's where the AG always seems to come down, or the county attorney, because they consider just about everything you're discussing and proposing. So here's some examples I'm just going to zip through. So would you have a problem there? A to B, B to C and D? Sure you would. And this one just ended up screwed up when I tried to do it. So A goes to B, B goes to D, D goes to C, C goes back to B, B goes back to, yeah, obviously you've got a problem with that one. They're all kind of a little closed loop. And this is what we call the hub and spoke, where a person just sends out an email blast. Hey, I think we should blah. Or somebody has talked to me about blah. They sent out an email blast to other council members. Okay, you've had a meeting. So, information blasts from the staff are usually okay, provided there's no reply or discussion. In other words, if staff sends you some information, that's fine. Just don't start contacting the other council members or board and commission members or anybody else about it, okay? So just be very, very careful. As I told you, quorum is members present, so you only need three. You don't really need four. So here are the possible penalties. This is the statute 431.07. You can get fines. The fines can range from $500 to $2,500 each for each violation. The bigger problem is that attorney's fees can be included in that if somebody files something against you in Superior Court. And if they found out you did it deliberately, most times, let's be honest, most of these are just simple mistakes. People don't realize what's going on. I understand that. But if you did it deliberately, you can be removed from the office. The court can take you out of office, even including our council members. The town can't, this is the big thing, the town can't expend any public funds to provide for the fines regarding the open meeting law violation. Except the town can be ordered to pay a plaintiff's attorney's fees, the person that brought the suit against them. But more than likely, they're going to put it up against you guys. Why? Because it's personal on you. You're the ones that have to declare when you have a conflict. So any action you're taking in violation of open meeting law is null and void. If you did something, you're probably going to have to do it again in front of an open group. So, general rules, don't email the entire council. Don't be at a place something is discussed that might come before you. Use the buddy system. And when I say the buddy system, usually you have one other person you can talk to on your board or commission to exchange ideas. Don't ever talk to more than that, okay? Set up a buddy system. Don't forward or copy other members in response to any email. And when you email others, don't only give your own thoughts. Even with that one buddy, don't give a thought of, oh, by the way, I heard so-and-so was considering this. Because all of a sudden, now you're starting to cause the third person to come up. So you may want to include the following language to ensure compliance with the OML. They should not forward this message, and members should not reply. So there are exceptions to the open meeting law. These are the executive sessions. This is stuff that doesn't have to be done in public. I'm going to skip through most of this. The reason is, you guys almost never have anything that falls into any one of those seven categories. It's almost always the town council, planning zoning commission, the board of adjustment, that kind of thing. So, minutes. Oro Valley uses general action minutes that have to comply with the state laws. A lot of times when we get to committees want something more detailed. They want detailed minutes. Who suggested what, this, that, and the other kind of thing. No, that's not what's required under the state law. The state law says they have to be general minutes. They're basically action minutes. It's just, you had a discussion about this topic. These are the people that suggested the motion, and this was the vote. So we're not going to get into detailed minutes. Conflicts of interest. Okay, as appointed members of the boards of commission, you represent the town of Oro Valley. You must avoid situations people accuse you of financial gain or bias. You need to take a neutral and fair look at all the facts and all the circumstances. If you don't, it looks bad on Oro Valley, it looks bad on you. And again, you're personally responsible for declaring conflicts. So, this is the statute, well, the start of the statutes, there's about seven of them, that starts legal conflicts of interest, okay? It's fairly limited. It says you have a conflict of interest for money or property, where you might get a financial gain. All right? That's the legal conflict of interest, and that's the thing that will really get you in trouble with the Attorney General's office. So, what do you do to declare a conflict? Well, first off, you've got to make sure the conflict exists. A lot of times, people think there's conflicts, and there's actually not, because it's something that might happen in the future. But if you have a good idea that's going to come up in the future, don't discuss it. Don't get involved in it. Divest yourself of it if it's money, if it's a corporation or something of that sort. This is what the actual statute says. There has to be a substantial pecuniary interest of the council member or close relatives. So it only applies to the council member, board member, commission member, their spouse, child, grandchild, parent, grandparent, sibling, and their spouse. As I said, the conflict of interest statute is actually fairly limited. Okay? You don't want these people to make money for anything you do. I'm having trouble here. So, what is the substantial pecuniary interest? But the problem is when you go to the statute and say, okay, I want to know what a substantial pecuniary interest is because that's what they're telling me is illegal and will get me in trouble. So you go to it, and what do they say is a substantial interest is an interest that is not remote. And that's it. So you have to go to other statutes and other parts and you try and find out what a remote interest is. And you can find some of them, but they say, but this isn't a full list. So you're not really sure if you have a remote interest or not. So, I mean, it's really very strange, but that's the way it's set up. So less than 3% of the value, you're getting less than 3%, that's wrong, less than 3% of the value of your income from a corporation. Class interest, some of those others. Everything else that's a remote interest, we have to go into the law for people that have been sued and dig out the case law and try and come up with a list for it. So if you are even considering you might have an interest, it's a really good idea to come talk to the lawyers. Okay? So Arizona legislature has their own definition of conflicts of interest. Like I said, open meeting law doesn't apply to them, but they've said what a conflict of interest is, and basically a conflict of interest is a bias. So if you're going to deal with conflicts of interest, you want to know if it's money or property, does it affect me or my family, or is the interest remote? But town council member owns a lot of stock in Hilton Hotels, and they get a substantial portion of their income from Hilton Hotels. Hilton Hotel comes in and wants to build a new hotel in the town. What should the council member do? They should declare a conflict of interest, obviously. So, you have to disclose, this is what you have to do if you think you have an actual conflict of interest. You have to disclose the conflict of interest at the meeting it's going to be considered at. In other words, you're going to stand up and say, I can't consider this because I have a conflict of interest and this is why. And you should give a reason why. Then you immediately withdraw from participation. What does that mean? Well, we want you to leave the room. Why? Because you have people standing that you've talked and you've declared your conflict and you stood on the back here and you're sitting here and the matter comes and your friends who are on the council look at you and you can kind of roll your eyes, you can shake your head, you can nod, you can do other things. So, unfortunately, that happens too often. So it asks you to completely leave the room and not be in eyesight of anybody. The problem is if you ignore declaring a conflict and you should have known that you had it, you can face some pretty serious criminal charges too. So, here's the problem we got with HPS. Problems arise because of either close or financial relationships. We have a very close relationship with HBS. We should have a very close relationship with HBS. We have to work together. There's no other way around it. We have to work together. So it's not an actual legal conflict, but it's a bias. So we've got to be very careful about what we do. So having a bias is not per se illegal. It causes problems with perceptions. So, and what we as lawyers call a newspaper test. So, for example, suppose one of the commission members goes to HPS here, and HPS is going to ask the town to do something for them. Okay, and you're a member of the HPS. Okay, what's the newspaper headline going to be when people find out about this? Okay. You, sitting on the commission, are going to vote on something which belongs to the organization you belong to give money to that organization. Now, if you're a person sitting out, I'm just a normal person sitting out there, how does that look? Well, it doesn't look very good. So we want you to think about those types of relationships when you have it with HBS. And like I said, I love HBS. I really do. I was here when HBS was. I was here with the mayor. And we do a lot of stuff together. We have to do a lot of stuff together. but you've got to be really careful about biases and conflicts of interest. What we ask is you not be a member of the HBS while you're sitting on this board, please. And, you know, it's always good to have arm's length transactions with them. I think it's great they can come here and talk to you because that's out in public. They want to make a suggestion. They go to staff. Staff puts it on an agenda, and you talk about it. That's perfect because that's out in the open for everybody. That's fantastic. But if they're coming to you and talking to you about something, that's bad because you might end up having a meeting. Okay, as I said, we love HBS. Suppose they come and ask to recommend the town put in turf and watering systems all around the buildings at Steamboat Ranch. Okay, we're going to have the biggest grass field ever. It's going to be great. Personally, I love that. But, you know, okay. The problem is, if you are a member of HBS, how's that going to look? Okay. So, it's always best to conduct town business considered at what's considered arm's length transactions. Spend some time. Think about it. What you're currently recommending, if they're making recommendations to you, that's great. I mean, if it's just you, that's great. But please, don't do any more. Do maybe one more. Just two. Okay? That's what I'm asking. Just two. And it's always best to go to staff. Because staff can look at it. They'll make a recommendation. They'll get it on an agenda for you to discuss. That's their job, to look and see if it's a good idea or not a good idea. So it can save a lot of headaches for you in the future. We just want you to think about it. So recap, OML's a state requirement. There's an agenda published 24 hours in advance with enough specificity and it's not really too funky so that it makes people mad. We're trying to get to what we're really talking about. Calls to the audience, we allow them here. Here in Oro Valley, we've decided we're doing calls to the audience. Despite what the Attorney General says, and they're letting us do it. You've got to read all that stuff at the beginning. Meetings, as I've told you, that's where things get really funky. What is a meeting? It doesn't have to be like we're sitting here. It could be anytime, anywhere, as long as you are involved, and then it comes up at something at a meeting like this. Exec sessions, don't worry about. Conflicts of interest, there's conflicts of interest. There's bias and appearance of impropriety. One is legal under the statutes. One is the bias that the legislature goes with. Records, state requires action minutes. That's why you don't get these long things. Because remember, we've got to store all these minutes forever, and computers fill up. And there's a state archive we have to send all this stuff to. That's why they require just general minutes. And remember, the goal is to keep away from the appearance of bathroom use. That's all we want you to do. Okay? So, think. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Yes. No?
Am I allowed to ask one?
You scared everyone.
I asked you that question because I would like to give you the guest an opportunity.
The chair says yes. You can ask me the question.
We've been told that the Oro Valley Historical Society, OVHS, is not really welcome at these meetings and can no longer make a report at these meetings. We used to be able to.
Yeah, that's not true. It's not that you're not welcome at the meeting. You're always welcome at
Where's the wine then?
Yeah. Well, you're always welcome at the meetings. The problem is with reports. And this is a pet peeve of your attorneys, and I'm going to lay it out there. And I sit on one side, and somebody, another attorney in my office, sits on another side. If you're giving a report is just a report. It can't have any discussion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, the problem is that we're having discussions over things. So we're cutting back on the reports. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And that's happening not only here. I want you to know that's not only happening here. That's happening at other places. So we're trying to cut back on the reports we have because we're having illegal discussions because they haven't been agendized.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Cool.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That information has been shared at
Oro Valley Historical Society meetings with members of the board. That has been shared multiple times. So if the information you received is not that, then it was inaccurate information provided to you.
Okay.
100%. We've discussed it multiple times. This is not anything new.
Yeah, and I want to make it clear, look, HPS serves such a big role here, because like I said, I was here back when we started all this stuff. Your role is indispensable. It really is. The problem is we've got to make sure that we comply with the state laws. And so that's what we're doing. We're kind of cracking down on that. One of the reasons we're cracking down on that is because these are now all being filmed. And they're perfectly available to the Attorney General's office. So before, we just had minutes, and they weren't sure if we were doing it right or wrong. Now they know if we're doing it right or wrong. Does that make sense? Okay, yes.
I just have one more layer of clarification to what Matt just said. In beginning of 2001, we asked for the reports to go quarterly. That hasn't changed. So they are still the reports are still quarterly and still, meaning you guys's. And they're still open for blue cards anytime.
They can all, of course. Blue cards are always, like I said, we have not eliminated calls to the audience at this point, even though the Attorney General representative or suggested it, because we almost had a revolt. How else are people ever going to let their representatives know how they feel and what's going on? I mean, that's why you have calls to the audience. Just understand during the call of the audience, you can't get into a discussion about anything. Mm-hmm. That's all.
I have a question, too.
Yes.
So the Oro Valley Historic Society is, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it a closed meeting? It's not open to the public?
Oh, no. They're open.
Okay, so anybody can attend your meetings.
General meetings are open. Our board executive board meetings are not.
Okay.
We're a private.
And then is there a conflict, counselor, for us to attend their, somebody on our commission to attend their meetings?
No, as long as it's one person.
Yes, okay.
So,
and it has to be the same person every time.
Yeah.
It
doesn't have to be. In the
past, when boards and commissions have meetings field trips and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
it has been included a statement in the public agenda that a possible quorum would be present.
Yes.
Is that still allowed?
A possible quorum will be present? It's still allowed. We strongly suggest they not have a full quorum at it, is what's going on lately.
So that it's basically the town clerk used to have to put out an announcement.
Yeah.
And say, like, if the Chamber of Commerce is having
a meeting, and then four members council go. Then we list it as a meeting. But understand, we list it as a meeting just because four of them are going to be there, but we don't list an agenda or anything because we don't know what it is. So we're just saying, just in case somebody slips up and starts talking when they shouldn't, at least we made it a meeting. But are you still in violation? Yeah, you're still in violation. Why? Because if you were talking and you didn't have an agenda for it available at least 24 hours in advance, then that would be an illegal discussion.
So does that mean that if the chamber has a state of the town address, then and the town council has a table, do they have to have seven tables?
No. You're just hoping that they're smart enough not to talk about things they shouldn't be talking about. That's why I said one of the things that we always suggest is, if you're going to be together at some place, at a meeting or something like that, the only things you should talk about are sports and weather. Kind of like your mom told you. Avoid politics. Avoid all the other stuff. Just talk about sports and weather, because that will get you in trouble.
So that the members of the commission could attend a general membership meeting,
mm-hmm.
of the society.
Right.
If they
don't discuss any of the business.
Right. And if the staff posted a potential quorum notice.
Right. Yeah. But understand, they can't talk about anything. and if you're going to make a proposal that's going to come in front of them, take it to staff so they can do a report on it. And then they can discuss it in an open meeting. All right.
Toby, yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if there is a notice posted about a possible quorum, usually the executive assistant or something has asked and gained whether or not there's some sort of desire by multiple members to go. So it's not something that's always posted case. Happen.
But there's always occasions, especially, unfortunately, if you're a council member, because you're going there and you're snipping grand openings, and you've got all kinds of things that go on that are part of your responsibilities. So that's why we have those. Anything else?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Excellent presentation. On to the consent agenda. Consent agenda item number one, review and approval of the December 6, 2021 meeting minutes. Do we have any discussion on the December 6 meeting minutes? Okay, I move to approve the December 6, 2021 regular session meeting minutes. May I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, seconded by Commissioner Casals. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Okay. Regular session agenda item number one, discussion and possible action to recommend changes to the Oral Valley Cultural Heritage Preservation Plan. Item number two, Steam Pump Ranch. Lynanne, will you be introducing this discussion here?
Sure, I can. It didn't go automatically to Steam Pump Ranch.
No, it's the whole panel.
Yeah. No, sometimes when you click on number two, it will go there, but it didn't.
So it'll go to page three.
Yeah, so go to page three. Scroll to page three. Okay, so the idea behind bringing this before you guys, and hopefully you re-listen to Chair Beal's comments. However, even if you didn't, I'm more than happy to talk about today's uses, and some of you are very aware of today's uses, but it's to take what the last time this was reviewed by the commission was in 2011, so, and we're supposed to be looking at having eyes on it more often. We took 1 year basically to review each of these sections, and now we're bringing them back up and going, is this wording still appropriate or should we update it? So that's the idea behind what we're doing right now. I
can leave it.
You want to go ahead?
Yeah. So we were tasked to go into the historic Steam Pump Ranch and review what was going on there. And obviously there's been some time that's gone by and certain things have happened as far as since the original Historic Steam Pump Ranch. So for example, we may need to update some wording in the plan. It is recognized nationally through a listing in the National Register of Historic Places. It is recognized locally in that Pima County. Possibly we may want to add the words voters and past council approved expenditures in 2004 of $5 million for its acquisition of historic preservation and public use. Those words are not currently there.
And so can I give them a little bit of back? So there was some funding that had been intended. So all of the monies were bond monies, but there was some money that had been specified for Navajo Park way before it was a park, way before it was currently used the way it is now. And we needed more at Steam Pump Ranch, and what that money was set aside for at Naranja Park could not happen. The prices had gone up and stuff. So the council chose to put those monies on steampunk ranch. Voted as a council to do that. So that's why that kind of an update might be good, because Pima County voters and past council, in order to achieve the $5 million. So, and just to make it more accurate.
Yeah, so there was $2 million for the steampunk ranch bond, and $3 million from the town council from the Raha Park bond for use on SPR. So another change in the verbiage could be the property currently says is an excellent locale for creating a sense of place. Adding the words is providing. It holds economic viability as an educational facility, special events, venue, and heritage park. And I'd like to kind of share with you the philosophy on the economic viability. The economic benefits are a measure of the value of the project will deliver to the society as a whole. So it's not just one segment, it's to everybody. Documents pertaining to the preservation and maintaining of the property include the intergovernmental agreement between the Pima County and the town of Oral Valley for implementation of the 2004 bond issue project for the Steam Pump Ranch acquisition in 2006 and Steam Pump Ranch Master Plan 2007. So the clarification would be to state that the Steam Pump Ranch Master Plan update in 2014 and the Master Planting Plan of 2016 and the Deed of Preservation easement between the town of Oral Valley and Pima County 2008. And all these are in Appendix C. So the suggestion is that we would probably want to add an appendix for Steam Pump Ranch Master Plan update in 2014 and the Master Planting Plan of 2016. So that's...
So is anybody confused, or are you following?
I'm following.
Well, the 2014 and 16, you're saying those things happened?
Those things have happened, and those are additional documents that pertain to that property and that we need to be making sure happen, along with the elements of the 2007 master plan, unless there were nuances that were changed in the 2014 one. In other words, all those documents need to work together. We can't just only mention one, or shouldn't.
Yeah, correct. And it's basically adding an appendix to clarify that.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I got to get back to the next agenda item here. Okay, so the next agenda item, I believe, is...
Hold on. We need to find out if anybody else had any suggested
yes.
changes, and then you all need to vote. It is an action item.
Okay.
If they like your ideas.
Okay, so going back to the review, does anybody have any input?
Regarding adding the information about the two updated documents?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Makes sense. Fine.
Any other suggestions after reviewing the Steam Pump Ranch report?
So to clarify, his first comment was that it's listed on the National Registry.
And what you're proposing?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So, and make sure they know what the changes are.
Yeah, so I believe everybody has a copy of the...
You can see it up here.
Okay, I can't read that far, though. Let me get that one.
I don't have a copy, but I'm reading it.
One second here.
I read it prior.
Okay, so the... Everybody has a copy of the historic Steam Pump Ranch.
Thank you.
The two paragraphs, right? That's up on the screen.
Uh-huh.
So, number one is we are suggesting in the first sentence that is recognized locally in that Pima County, to add the words voters and past council, just those words, approved the expenditures in 2004 of the $5 million for its acquisition. So that's something that happened, and we need to, the suggestion is to add that to the report there. And then item number two is the property, adding the words is providing.
You're saying replace, right?
Yeah, instead of having it say provides, is providing, because it is providing.
Well, it does provide. I don't know, that's just a semantic thing. They both mean the same thing.
Well, does provide is the same thing, but we don't have does.
No, provides.
Provide.
Provides and is providing, it's the same thing. Yeah. Provides means
like
does
said,
provide.
It's yeah. Semantics.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on those words there? Is providing, provides, okay.
But the and council, I think that's the other one, is add and past council, and then adding the information about the 2014-2016 docs.
Right.
Yeah, those make sense. And what was the 2014 doc? It was just an updated steam pump ranch master plan?
Yes.
So the 2007 one was updated?
Yes.
Okay. So that would come out then, or we wouldn't have the 2007 because we're going
to... No, the 2014 one is a rather simply done one. It does update some of the plans, but it's not a completed, updated plan.
I get it.
Okay, then we have the last one, add an appendix for a steam pump ranch.
Yeah, and you're okay with the master planting plan too, right? Mentioned that. It was approved by a commission.
And that's not in here, so we'd be adding that as a list item on a master planting plan because it mentions.
So both plans have been added since the 2007 original master plan.
And what is a planting plan?
It just says where we should put trees, what type. In other words, we went back in history and
it's literal.
So that we can be pretty accurate as we plant.
Okay, so I would like to make a motion that these alterations in the language be presented to the commission and approved. All in favor? Or
a second.
A second?
Second.
A second.
All in favor then?
Aye.
Opposed? No. We'll move to the next agenda item here. Which is... It's a department update by Mrs. Delaman. Is there anything to report?
Actually, you still have the discussion and possible...
There's two more of the session agenda items.
Okay. Okay, so I'm not sure if I'm on this agenda right here. Is it regular session agenda item number
two?
Number
the
Proctor
Lieber.
Number two, discussion regarding possible uses, thank you, of the Proctor Lieber House. And staff would be assisting us on this.
Yeah, so Chair Beal, this was the one that we sent out the notice to please review the CommuSalt Econ
reports.
Go ahead and click on that report.
In
the month of December, we had a discussion about Steam Pump Ranch and the facilities out there on the property, and the Proctor Lieber House was one of those items that was discussed. So from that meeting and in the instructions in preparation for this meeting, we asked the commission members go through and review the adaptive reuse feasibility report, because this was done through Consult Econ and the town to identify what the best uses would be for the buildings that are still standing out there on the property. The Proctor Lieber House is very different from the other structures that remain, mainly because it was really the only building that was identified as being a place that could have commerce take place, have a retail component or something along those lines. So in an effort to try to make the discussion about the Proctor Lieber House in the future and what it could be as productive as possible, that this report was included for the discussion.
So I asked her to pull up this and go all the way to, I believe it's slide 14. Let me see. Yeah. Adaptive reuse opportunities. Yes. So in this opportunities page, you can see some of the, and this is just a snapshot. This was CommuSalt Econ's PowerPoint that they presented to the commission prior to sharing the entire report with us. And so this is just a snapshot of some of the things that they talked about. If you want to go ahead and roll forward. Community recreation events, marketing, vending, and pop-up retail. So again, this slide that was on your agendas gives some suggestions, but if you'll move down one more, I think it specifically talks about, and go down one more. One more. There we go, there's the Proctor Lieber House, there's what we're looking for. So, if we dig into the entire report, this is just a snapshot, but it really does encompass what it says. And so that's why I thought we can go here. I also have every page that they, and I've copied what they discuss on each of the areas where they bring it up. But this pretty much does capture it. So they talk about restaurant, cafe, coffee shop, catering, operations, recruit a private business, community events, recreation, cultural space, with or without a kitchen. And then goal of food service, kitchen facility is to support the growth of community events, the rental for social events, weddings, receptions, reunions, birthdays, anniversaries, etc. And corporate or nonprofit uses, office space for small businesses, nonprofits, such as chambers, etc. So that's it in a nutshell. They do go into some more detail if we want to look at the whole report, but maybe you guys already have. But this, you all had mentioned in a future agenda item that you wanted to talk about uses. And I believe actually Paul brought it up, but without looking at what we just did, this is a 2020 report. We just had this very excellent group come in and make suggestions. And so if you guys want to go ahead and discuss those things and talk about what you would like to see in there, obviously, is this an impossible action? Discussion regarding? Nope, it's just a discussion. So it'll just be a discussion, okay? Yes.
Yes. I did some research on Steam Pump Ranch. And it is, and the history that I found out was absolutely fascinating. In 1866, and I'll make this quite brief, in 1866, the Buffalo Soldiers were formed, and of course, they came through mainly this area. I spoke with a historian of Buffalo Soldiers at Fort Huachuca. I don't know.
Huachuca.
Yeah, there. And he gave me a history that when the Buffalo Soldiers would come in this direction, that they would stop at Steam Pump Ranch. That was more or less of a watering hole for the horses to refresh, for the soldiers to take a shower. It was a resting area, if you will. And when you mentioned, Matthew, about the involvement and the history of that, and I found that very interesting. So perhaps, I don't know if we can put it on a later agenda, to possibly have a Buffalo Soldier reenactment, possibly during next year Black History Month, and Saturdays, and have that for the children to listen to as a storyteller, to let them know that they came through this area and we're standing on history ground again. But again, that was in 1882 when they came, in the late 1880s. So I found that very interesting, that in our backyard, that far back was history. So possibly with the Lieber House, you know, have that reenactment. But I don't know, again, if that's a future agenda item or...
So I have some input on this too. That the this is a very sensitive subject as to how this will be used, you know, because we got many directions that could go, and you got the economic direction, and then you have preserving the cultural heritage, and in some respects there are conflict because you could have a real high income producing venue there, but it kind of loses all the intent. So somewhere it seems that we need to have a, you know, create our dividing line as to what would really enhance that property as opposed to just pure commercial usage. And at the same time, there has to be, if you're going to bring in private enterprise, there's going to have to be a profit form. So, that's the quandary we're in, and it'd be great to get some discussion with the members here to see some ideas of what direction it really could go.
On the in the chart, it talked about the different uses and the what it would lose and what it would gain, and so, and you mentioned not making it purely retail or commercial. A couple of the uses were educational and cultural, being, you know, museums and classes and whatnot, and both those options, according to this, allow it to retain its historical features. Even some of the hospitality and retail options, it allows it to retain its historical features. There were some constraints mentioned on the other page, but it had to do with people in town, like, you know, being a good idea and being popular, but nothing takes away from the retention of historical features. So there are some,
yeah, the
options that fall in line with,
absolutely, that's a great comment. And currently there's a broad spectrum of what it could be used for, and maybe it would be great if we could help shape it with the historic preservation in mind, whether it's education, classes, simultaneously making it, maybe expedite the renovation and getting it finished.
And I can't remember why we had talked about the, in leading up to this, we talked about the funding for it, and then we talked about sources of revenue, and I think that's what brought us to the uses of it. Am I right? That's what brought us here.
Yeah, I'll let Matt refresh what he mentioned about, so it, we had the RFP-RFI possibility discussion, and he mentioned why we were going to wait on those couple things. So an RFI is request for information, RFP is request for proposal. So do you want to remind him what you said a couple months ago?
Sure, back in December, the funding for this project, this piece of property in particular, was brought up. And using some somewhat dated figures, but, you know, the low end about being $1.5 million to do some sort of renovation and restoration of it. And I want to say, too, first and foremost, everything we've done out there at that site, the town takes the history very, very seriously. I mean, that is at the forefront of everything we've done out there up to this point, and would continue, because we know that is the town's history, and we're not going to compromise that for a quick buck or two. That's, you know, the community is not going to let us do that, and ultimately we don't want to do that. So When we talk about the dollar value associated with this, it is substantial enough to the point where it would need some significant funding source, whether that, you know, most likely being some sort of bond funding where you get that large amount of money. The former Commissioner Honestad, who was here at that December meeting, had talked about his level of experience with some of this, and you know, the idea of doing concerts or some special events, while they're great as a community event, the fundraising component of that just wouldn't really scratch the surface of what's necessary here on this property. So we have the Proctor Lieber House kind of last on the list of structures within the historic core, mainly because of the individual price tag associated with it. Now, we do have plans for that building from the standpoint we know it is coming up and a decision is going to ultimately have to be made on what it's going to be, how it's going to be used. What we've done to lay some of the groundwork of that is, as we've got these other projects going on right there currently, the garage building, and then quickly following that, we'll have the barbecue building and the bunkhouse is done. We are improving the infrastructure on the site, so getting water and electrical and sewer where necessary into that historic core, and being able to stub out to a building like the Proctor Lieber House, which should, you know, help save some cost of that, but it's putting the infrastructure in place now so that we can do all of the work that we can do on our own, being the before buildings that I just mentioned right now, so that when those are completed, we can go out, whether, you know, we haven't made a decision certainly whether we do an RFP or an RFI, but in order to try to drum up some level of interest in this community or beyond, putting our best foot forward and showing that we have all of this together, but we're ultimately going to need a partner who works with the town on this property to make sure that we, you know, preserve the history there, as well as then any sort of town dollars that would go towards it would make sense in conjunction whatever another outside organization would be interested in putting money towards as well, so that it all works together.
Under the constraints, it mentions that it says that locating a private business here may not be acceptable to some in the community because it's a public park. Not acceptable is just some people won't favor it, or does that mean it might be
I believe doable? Well, those are just kind of the input from the company that put it together.
Yeah, yeah, that's not like.
And I think that's kind of, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but interpreting it as being, if you select a private business, depending on the process you go by, you just don't want to show any sort of favoritism.
Yeah.
I think that's more or less what that is.
Yeah. And if everybody doesn't mind, I'm going to take what he just said into really simple terms, because this is the way I compute it, is that once all of that infrastructure is in, those other buildings are done, it's more likely that we're going to attract someone that will say, I want to put my money either into the project in the front or into a long-term lease. And we'll already have a look and a feel, and so a complementary business is more likely to come forward as well. So there's all kinds of benefits for that. Let's complete this before we work on that. But it was something that you guys asked for on future agenda items, and that's why it's here for you guys to talk about. Honestly, you can say, that's good, let's bring it back up when we're getting closer, but truthfully, that's why it's here, so you guys can kind of feel that subject matter out.
And what would be the end result of this, of a discussion or even action here? It would just be to make a recommendation to the council?
Yeah, this isn't an action item. So
no,
really
I know it's
just,
not.
Yeah.
This is just discussion. This is a discussion question.
Oh, yeah.
In the end, to what end would we be discussing this? Except to just take up some minutes. I mean, what would be our, what's, like, where should our discussion be leading us someday?
Sure. So ultimately, I think the best answer to that is when we get to the position where we feel we are able to post this and get some sort of public input, we would work together to make sure we're all on the same page with that. So if we come to the HPC and say, we've completed these projects out here, the town feels comfortable in making the next step on moving forward with trying to find a partner to work with us on the Proctor Lieber House, we'd bring that forward, explain, you know, some guidance that we've received from probably the finance department, probably from the legal department, share that information with everybody and have a bit of a discussion, because ultimately we want to all be on the same page. So then from this, we would take it forward and say, this does have the, you know, the HPC is in agreement with this and supportive of this direction. So making sure that we're all on the same page. It gives everybody a chance to have that discussion.
And so if you come up with something concrete right now and say, you know, we really like these three ideas, when we get to this point, we would remind you. Back in February of 2022, y'all said this is what you would be interested in. And then we would say, is that still the consensus? Would you like to bring it up again? So right now is just something for us to bring back to you later, because really a later discussion would still have to be had just before the RFI, RFP, or in part of the selecting process when we come forward and say these are the best of the RFP, RFIs, you know.
So. Okay. That makes sense. I answered my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt, for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other input on this topic here?
No, just whatever we read in here, it all makes sense and seems to agree with what we've been discussing.
And I agree with your trend of thought also that we would like to ultimately come up with some ideas that we could at least posture the ambiance of the environment we want to create. So, next.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
My biggest concern looking at this is missing the forest through the trees. In that respect, if we, you know, specifically allocate the property Lieber House for retail, and then later other items are allocated for retail, I'm concerned that everything turns into retail and we've just created a new marketplace, as opposed to really retaining the historical side of steampunk, which I think is the end goal of all of this. So I guess my bigger question is, how much funding does steampunk need at this point, and how much of this is going to have to be parceled out to be a moneymaker, if any?
Are you at? As it sits right now, the amount of money steampunk needs to do the Proctor Lieber House?
Really, to do the Proctor Lieber House and move forward. It, obviously, it takes money to keep all of this going, but are we talking...
So like an operational cost associated with it? We'd be probably talking about, you know, as I said before, about $1.5 million is the number that's been used previously. I think that number is outdated, certainly if you've had to purchase anything recently, doing any sort of construction.
For the site or just for the Proctor Lieber
House? Just for the Proctor Lieber House. So, yeah, any number we're talking about is specific to that location. So, you know, $1.5 million, $2 million to do the improvements to the Proctor Lieber House to get it in a place where it could be occupied. Now, that's just fixing it up. That's not talking about doing specific infrastructure if there was a restaurant that wanted to go in there or something along that.
Right.
You know, a restaurant's going to need something very different than a gift
office
shop.
Space.
Yeah, or office space or something like that, absolutely. And that's part of why, you know, taking the approach where we see what the public might be interested in using that space for before we sink any money into it, is, you know, we're trying to be responsible with future dollars.
Will this proposal go as just a one-off, or is this a, you know, capturing all of the buildings at this point? I understand we have the master plan on that one, but if we start deviating and saying, hey, let's go retail.
So the town owns all of the buildings currently, and if we were to do this, I don't believe it would be the desire of, I don't know what the future holds, but I don't believe it would be the desire to give up ownership of the building. I don't think legally we can do that with the way that we took the property, or with the way that we gained ownership of the property.
Right. It's not so much ownership that I'm worried about on this one. It's more of you change the overall public perception of this area. You know, it goes from historic location to shopping mall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of my concern on that. So as far as, I like the idea of looking at each one of these individually, but mm-hmm. at what point do we look at them all together and say, you know what, we're only going to put through two of these as potential retail, whereas the rest of them just have to stay historic.
The Proctor Lieber House would be the only place I could have the commercial.
Yeah, the rest of it is all master planned and used. Those buildings that we told you we've got are completed. In the master plan update, we are creating as close to those master plan update. This is the only one that was kind of general. And if you go through that, the CommuSalt Econ feasibility study,
mm-hmm.
it's the only one that they say is recommended for one of these kinds of uses, because it's the only one that's big enough.
Well, they talked about the ranch house, the bunk house.
Yeah, they talk about them, but they're not recommended because it's the only one that's big enough. I mean, if you, they're on page...
I was looking at page 11-2. Or is that Roman numeral 2-2? Hold on, let me see how this thing's numbered.
And it's Roman numeral.
It is Roman numeral. So Roman numeral 2-2, they've got that table, opportunities to retain historical figures. Features. They talk about using studio offices, education, hospitality, retail, and they, I mean, when we look at the constraints page, but they say that a lot of these things would still retain, so you could do retail across the board, and they're saying it would retain historical features of those three buildings at least.
Right, so you could do it in there, but it was not their recommendation that those things take place in there, mainly due to size. And the other part of it, too, is really the town has programming plans for each one of those buildings. So it's not something that we would be interested in doing. Because, to your point, I believe there's some stuff, there's a building in there, I can't remember off the top of my head, that talks about being used for yoga, you know, like as a yoga studio. If we were to do yoga out there on the property, that would be a program that the town runs and is offered much like we do at the community center. So
could we see the programming thing too then also?
Well, we don't have a program. Oh, you're talking about a programming plan for the...
Yeah.
But we haven't created
that. Well, no. So that's with regards to the building. So like the garage building is going to house Linnean staff and we'll have some... We can provide you, yes.
Oh,
we
can provide. So that would help. I mean, that's...
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
We're looking at this without knowing about that.
Yes.
So that would help too.
Sure, we could definitely... Yeah. Provide you a more detailed programming plan of the property.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of that is in the master plan. Also.
I didn't know that.
Any other comments? Thank you, everybody, for your thoughts and suggestions. And I think we all are in agreement. We would like to maybe continue the conversation and talk about that later. Regular session agenda item number 3, discussion and possible action to select a Historic Preservation Commission member to draft the Historic Preservation Annual Report as required by OBTC sections.
I looked at the last one. Is it just doing the same thing we did for the last one?
It's just required as part of us being a certified local government.
It's
a legal requirement.
I'll do it. It looked pretty easy, so I'm hoping it's
really
easy.
Easy.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'll check.
And the two of us will help you if you have any questions. Right.
Somebody seconded
it. Wow, that was
easy. Yeah. Yeah.
Second. I thought I looked through and thought, what the heck? Somebody's got to put this together?
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're in agreement there.
And who seconded that, please?
I'll second. With enthusiasm.
Do we need a vote, or is just a second fine?
All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I have to recuse myself from that.
Okay, department update, Mrs. Delaman, is there anything else to report here?
Just really quickly, to give you guys an update on what's happening in Steam Pump Ranch at the moment, in terms of the garage, a structural engineer has assessed the walls. So we've had quite the delay on the construction of the garage building because the walls are, there was extra moisture this year and plus them moving things inside, clearing off old paint and stuff made walls start to fall. And so a structural engineer has assessed the walls and Sellers and Sons, which is the construction company that's going to be doing the work out there or is currently doing the work out there, has submitted a change order. So we're just going through the process of the change order. As soon as all of that is agreed upon and everything, construction should begin again. However, at the same time that things are going that way with the building, the water department is putting in the loop that will, as Matt mentioned, there will be the location near the Proctor Lieber House, the stubs for water there, as well as the other buildings. There will be a fire suppression system going into the Push House Museum. For the Historical Society, they'll get their water from this work. There will be extra hydrants where they're needed so that all of the houses and buildings out there will be safe. So at any rate, that work is right now being done. The tractors are out there and the stuff's being done. Then this coming Saturday is Second Step Saturday at Steampunk Ranch. I do invite you to attend that. We have an Adobe workshop with Adobe Mike, so if you're interested in getting your hands dirty and finding out how to keep those structures, stable, and if you guys will please spread the word to the Historical Society. So that is this this coming Saturday, and we have music from Linda Lou and the Rowdies, and should be some really fun banjo-y style music, art and antiques and crafts, and Commerce Corral vendors, tours of the historic Push House Museum by the Oro Valley Historical Society, Valentine's plant stakes as a child's craft, so there'll be little markers you put in your plants to know what they are as you do your spring planting, Archaeology Southwest doing prehistoric activities, and Heirloom Farmers Market as every Saturday. And then just as a sideline, we also are getting a lot more requests for weddings and birthdays and anniversary parties, so the popularity of the site as a pretty backdrop to private occasions has also been occurring. Celebrate Oro Valley, the festival that celebrates the past, future, and future of Oro Valley takes place at Steampunk Ranch in April to coincide with the town's birthday, and this year it will be April 9th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., and we have some amazing things happening. We have great big giant horse, we have dancing horses, we have folklorico dancers, we just have wonderful things happening that day. The Historical Society always really steps up their tours and does some really neat things in there. They're always neat, but they do a lot in there to show off the site for all of those extra visitors that come in on that day. And so the title this year is As Our Story Grows, and we'll also be highlighting the history of horses in the region, which is why we have so many horse programs scheduled. I do want to tell you that the oral histories that I've mentioned in the past are moving forward. Both the Historical Society and I, as part of the Oro Valley Historic Preservation Commission's desire to get oral histories, have been working on that. Sometimes you don't catch people in time. I was lucky enough to get Bob Weedy, who was one of the founders of Greater Oro Valley Arts Council, later became SACA, and right up until like the past 6 months, he was still out at the farmers market letting people know about our children's concerts maybe last year. Maybe he kind of went away with COVID, but letting people know about the children's concerts that are held in the council chambers here, and very, very much into art in the community. He also helped establish the 1% art. Anyways, he wasn't doing well with his health, but I was able to interview his family and his wife, and the very next week he passed away. So it was nice to get that family's input when they still were very positive, and that was a hard thing, but just to, well, actually, I'll wait. So the Historical Society had in the past interviewed Barbara McIntyre, so they're working on making that just honed down. They also recently did an oral history of Dick Egerdeen, and he is the gentleman who was the partner of Bob Weedy in that 1% sales tax, the early, 1% art for public art, and then also establishing Go Back that later became SACA. And so they were able to capture his. Next, they'll be working on Roxy Johnson. Her husband was a member of the council once upon a time, and she is a great lady in her own right by many, many, in many ways, and is a past president of the Historical Society. There are others that the town has worked on too, but I will tell you that Gail London, our former president or chair of the HPC here, the Historical Society just shared with me, and I wish I would have captured hers. She just passed away on the 1st.
Oh, wow.
So really hard stuff, so sometimes you don't get who you want to get, but that's been our goal, is to capture the histories, but you know, of those that we know. And Gail was still young, she had cancer. Then on a positive note, because I don't like to end negatively, I would like to share a picture with you. We did just recently, and I know it's taken a while to get this plaque made and the plaque stand made, but we just recently got the plaque posted in front of the home of the Blocks, and that is the house that went on our local registry last year. So during 2021. So anyways, there's the plaque and the Block family. So that's our good news to end on. So that's the end of my report.
Thank you, Mrs. Delaman. Do you think we could get permission to post their photo on Facebook?
This?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we did. Did we?
Did we?
We'll find out.
Okay. It'd be fun to do that.
If we didn't, we certainly will.
By the way, our next meeting will be Monday, March 7th, 2021. And since we only have 22. it says 21 in my belt here.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that.
I'm just reading. So if for any reason one cannot make it, let us know. Future agenda items. The next item on the agenda is future agenda items. The commission may bring forth general topics for future meeting agendas. Commission may not discuss, deliberate, or take any action on the topics presented pursuant to ARS 38-431-02H. Do we have any items to add to a future agenda? Okay, I have one suggestion, is that I understand that the planting plan, I guess, is coming up soon, or?
I think that's a good one to review, as well as the updated master plan, and maybe the regular master plan.
Yeah, it'd be great if we could review those plans, the master plan, the planting, and what was the third one there?
The master plan update.
The master plan update, and also I'd like to add, in addition to that, the possibility of looking at water harvesting in that planting plan.
So reviewing them during the meeting?
During the meeting, okay. Correct.
So being on a future agenda, maybe not all at once, we'll see.
Got it.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Seeing no further business, I would like to make a motion to adjourn at 6:34. Do I have to? Go ahead.
I would like to have a discussion about incorporating the Buffalo Soldier history into Steampunk Ranch in a way that we could, not just Black History Month, but making something more permanent and longstanding to bring forth that portion of our history.
I second that.
Seconded.
I did. Nicole.
Nicole first did.
Nicole.
Yeah.
I'm number one.
Okay, moving to adjournment here. Seeing no further business, I would like to make a motion to adjourn at 6:34 p.m. May I have a second?
A second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay, have a great evening.
Thank you.
You too.